Okay. So last week, we wrapped up the flood. And by the way, I think it's important to take note that the flood has many mentions in the New Testament. So I'll just throw, you can jot these down if you want. I'll just throw out a few references to you. Matthew 24:39, Luke 17:27, 2 Peter 2:5, and 3:6 are just a few mentions. Jesus mentions the flood. Peter mentions the flood. That this is not looked at as a just a legend or something like that. It looks as accepted as a real event in the New Testament. And you know, we also talked last week about the Ice Age, and that, you know, science, a lot of modern science talks about there being multiple ice ages. I know I can probably get into a little bit of deep water here, but I don't believe there's any evidence for multiple ice ages. I think there's evidence for a ice age. And as far as what would you say, a vehicle, a cause of those ice ages, does anybody know the causes? What does science say the causes of those many ice ages are? Does anybody have an idea what science says about the cause of those ice ages? You guys have just been through school, some of you young guys. What does science say caused those ice ages? No, what caused the climate change? Volcanoes? You know why you're answering like that? They don't say. Oh, maybe you've heard of asteroid or something. That's one heck of an asteroid, you know. Bam! Maybe it had to be three of them, because I think some scientists say three ice ages. But there's no vehicle. There's no stated, there's no reason, there's no explanation. The Bible has an explanation for a ice age, and that is the flood. The flood would legitimately cause an ice age. It's not just volcanoes, but volcanic activity. The oceans of the world heated up to 90 degrees. There's going to be this evaporation. There's lost this canopy protecting the earth. All these volcanoes are still are going off. There's super canes going on. All this evaporation is taking place now, moving over the landmass and dropping that moisture. And all this required for this, not necessarily colder winters, cooler summers. More moisture, cooler summers, and an ice age begins. And probably peaked around 500 years after the flood, and lasted till probably 700 years after the flood, is what scientists think that have studied this. And there's obviously much evidence for an ice age. And what most of the scientists that believe in creation, that believe the Bible, is there were not this total covering of ice, but there were still migration passages, still land, and the oceans were lower, and so there were land bridges like through the Aleutian Islands from Russia, what we now call Russia, over to Alaska, where in fact there's now, I think, what is there, 50 miles of open water between the two, so it's not really that hard to see a land bridge there. We'll talk about that today, about the spreading of people around the world. But this is kind of what was set up. As far as I told you, I'd mention briefly dinosaurs, is that there was a significant, talk about climate change. There was no debating of climate change in this time. There was real, honest to goodness, there was climate change, and there was a specific, definite cause for it, and there was an ice age. Now, there was still, obviously, there were still areas of warm and tropical places in the world around the equator. And so when animals came off the ark and they began to spread, I believe that dinosaurs were on the ark, that they wouldn't have obviously have to be a full-grown T-Rex, but either eggs or small young dinosaurs. I'm sure that would be the case in most large animals that were brought onto the ark. And as with other extinctions, there's not always a really good explanation. There's animals are still going extinct on a regular basis today. There's not always a clear, definitive answer to that. But one answer to why a lot of dinosaurs would die would be sheerly the tremendous climate change that took place. Most of the fossils that we find of dinosaurs are probably during the flood. They're in one strata, probably the flood era. You do not find human fossils from the flood era. Most of the human fossils we find actually come from that ice age period. And a lot of those people that were living that are sometimes classified as Neanderthals and cave dwellers, cavemen, they probably were cave dwellers as they extended north and as they moved and migrated, but they were human beings. They were not some kind of half ape-like creature and just coming out of that, almost trying to be human. They were real, honest-to-goodness people. And they were living in a hunter and gathering lifestyle, at least temporarily, as they spread after the Tower of Babel. And what was on my mind was to read this verse from Job. And if you'll, I don't think I put that on your outline. Job 40:15. Look at the behemoth which I made along with you, which feeds on grass like an ox. What strength it has in its loins, what power in the muscles of its belly. Its tail sways like a cedar. The sinews of its thighs are closely knit. Now, your Bible may have some kind of little notation there, like a little letter there, and then have a note at the bottom, and it may say something like hippopotamus or elephant on there. Some Bibles will have that, but I'll have to disagree with that notation. I don't know too many hippopotamuses with a tail that sways like a cedar, or an elephant with a tail that sways like a cedar. Its bones are tubes of bronze, its limbs like rods of iron. It ranks first among the works of God, yet its maker can approach it with his sword. So, what we think is that that dinosaurs did exist at the same time as people. This causes a great, great problem for evolutionists because they need these huge spans of time to separate dinosaurs and people. There's much evidence that dinosaurs existed at the same time as people. I believe this is evidence. I think Job saw a dinosaur. I don't think that people existed probably in close proximity. You're not going to find all these dinosaur remains and then right next to them find a whole bunch of human remains. That's not going to... I'm sure that there was some separation between the two. But we do see, for instance, there's drawings in caves down in southern Utah of... you'll see on the cave, you'll see a drawing of a deer, a drawing of an elk, a drawing of a wolf. And people that look at this will say, oh, look, there's a deer, there's an elk, there's a wolf. And then you'll see a drawing that looks a whole lot like a sauropod. You'll see a dinosaur. I mean, have you guys seen those pictures of those drawings? It's like, you can look it up. It's published and you can go see them. And so people will say, well, that's a deer, that's an elk, that's a wolf, and that's a mythical animal. Why is that a mythical animal? When you see all the tales and legends of dragons, do you think those are just made up all over the world? Somebody just made up dragons? Look at a dragon. What does that look like to you? Do you know what a dragon looks like? You know what dragons look like because there's a lot of drawings of them. Maybe you've seen them in movies, too. They look an awful lot like a dinosaur. There's much evidence that dinosaurs lived at the same time as people did. And there's going to be a lot of battle and fight against that because as soon as you say that there's any overlap there, then you've lost millions and millions of years. And if you're going to have evolution, you need millions and millions and millions of years if you're going to make that a plausible hypothesis. So, I know that's brief. We don't have a lot of time to go deeply into that. But just to acknowledge if that's on your mind as we go through this. What about the dinosaurs? I believe that is what is about the dinosaurs. I think there were probably also dinosaurs. You know, the name was not even invented until the late 1800s, named dinosaur. What does it mean? Terrible lizard? Terrible lizard. And if most dinosaurs were reptiles, I'm assuming they lived to be long ages, as did the people before the flood. And so you have a reptile that lives for 200 or 300 years. If they continue to grow throughout their lifespan, they're going to be massive. They're going to be huge. Okay, so let's move on to the Tower of Babel. On your outline, the last section there. And let's go to Genesis 10. And I would encourage you guys to research this yourself, the flood. And if you have questions, if that's something that stirs up questions or doubts, the dinosaurs, the flood, fossils, those evolution, you've already read plenty of material, in a sense, from the other side. Most of us have studied and read plenty of material about evolution. So I would encourage you to read another viewpoint, and you can go to answersingenesis.org, or you can go ICR, Institute for Creation Research, www.icr.org, and then answersingenesis.org. Okay, and this is the account of the Tower of Babel, the Table of Nations, and this takes place about 300 years after the flood. And verse 1 of chapter 10. This is the account of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, Noah's sons, who themselves had sons after the flood. And then if we go down to the last, this goes through all the sons of Noah and their descendants. And at the end it says, these are the clans of Noah's sons, according to their line of descendants within their nations, from these nations spread out over the earth after the flood. You know what interesting thing is that I've sat down with a group of people doing Affirm Foundations, and just kind of for the fun of it, we have talked and figured out which son of Noah everybody was from. And one Bible study we said that we had representatives from all three sons of Noah. And most of the people could identify, well, maybe they came because we know that Ham's descendants went into South Africa. We know that Japheth's descendants moved north up through Europe. And we know that Shem stayed in that general vicinity of the Middle East. And so we could actually, and it's kind of amazing, isn't it? We could actually have a good guess as to which line you were from which culture, which people group that your bloodline came through. So, and a lot of people have looked, a lot of experts have looked at this Table of Nations in Genesis 10, and there's no really better explanation for the peoples of the earth and where people come from. We'll talk about this a little more in a minute about race and where the different so-called races come from. So, God had told man to do what? If you look to Genesis 9, then God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. He told them to fill the earth, to spread out. Don't stay in one place. Go. For some reason, this reminds me, in a sense, and obviously they did not obey that command. It kind of reminds me of Acts chapter 6 with the Christians. They just clumped together until God forced them through persecution to spread out. They were to spread out through all the earth, weren't they? That was their command. They were not obeying that command. They were staying and that one together in that location where they were comfortable. So God had told them to go out through all the earth, to be fruitful. But man was going to change God's agenda, and he was going to add some stuff of his own. And there's going to be consequences for this. And some of these things you see, these are things, you're going to see these things repeated in one sense throughout history, all the way up until today. So, one, man decided to stay in one place. This was direct disobedience. That man thought he knew better than God for what was right. And he did not want to be told what to do. There we go back to that Adam nature. It's in every single one of us. He didn't want to be told what to do. I don't want to be told what to do. You don't want to be told what to do. Number two, they were going to build a tower to honor themselves. Let's go to chapter 11. Verse 1 through 4. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. As people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, "Come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly." They used bricks instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth." So they were, again, in direct opposition to what God had instructed them. They were going to build a tower to honor themselves. And who do you think is behind this? You know what I mentioned earlier about we can know some things about God? We can know how he operates, how he deals with people. Well, the same holds true of Satan. We can learn and see how he operates. And you see some patterns here that he does this with individuals, he did this with Adam and Eve, and he does it with nations, with people groups. God did not fit into these people's plans. You cannot exalt yourself like they wanted to do and still remain close to God. The two do not fit together. They were acting independent of God, and this became the first real incident of organized religion. They were going to make their own way. They were going to make their own way to God. And most people believe that these towers that they were building had to do with religious activities, that they were going to make a way to God. A lot of people believe that they were identifying the constellations and the zodiac, the stars, and that they were worshiping other so-called gods. And false religion has become known from this city of Babylon. It has been throughout the Bible, it's known as Babylon. And it's often associated with religion. And the name is often used by man in the Bible as man's religious efforts. And so this thing of religion, for us, we should fear religion in ourselves. This is for us. This is for believers, that we should fear that in ourselves of being distracted by religion. You know, we can think things or actions or places are holy when that's not the way God has set this up. You know, if I think back to not my young childhood, but as I was growing up, my parents had moved out in the country and they bought this place, and my dad built this big, front porch on the house, and you know, you drive down this 2 mile dirt road, then you turn off of that dirt road and you drive down this single lane road, that white sand that you get only in South Georgia, the white sand road, and then you drive this through the woods, and all of a sudden it opens up. And there's this huge garden here, and there's a huge garden there, and these live oak trees are just draping over. And there's that house sitting there with a huge front porch on it, and rocking chairs are sitting out there. And you just take a breath when you step there, and you walk onto the porch, and then into the house, and there's always something cooking. And there's my dad sitting there in his easy chair, and there's the wood stove that he built out of scrap metal from the barn. And it just has an atmosphere, an aroma, a feel that is just unlike any place I can conjure up in my mind. And there were people there and drinking sweet tea, and it was just like there was family. It was just, I loved to go out there to Mount Pleasant and be out there with my family and bring my friends and be in the garden and eat and eat and eat and sit on the front porch and talk. It was a special place. But you know, they're not there anymore. They're not out there in the country anymore. They had to move to town. And if I had a good guess, I would bet there's probably couple of redneck families living out there. I bet there's 27 bulldogs in the front yard. There's a couple of trucks out there jacked up. And I bet it is in shambles right now at that place. And so if I was to drive up there, I would kind of go, oh, man. But you know, it wasn't that place. It wasn't that place that was important. It was a relationship. It was a family. It was what we had together. It was nothing. It didn't have anything to do with that place. You see, religion would want to hang on to that place as opposed to what was real and what was labored for in the sense of what was sacrificed for. Now, there's hard work was in building the place. There was hard work in doing that. But that's not what was holy about that setting. It was the people. It was the relationship that were there. And we tend to grab onto the things that are symbolic. And there's nothing wrong with symbolism. There's nothing wrong with ceremony. There's plenty of that in the Bible. But we can get tricked by that stuff. We can get tricked by coming to church every Sunday. We can get tricked by listening to a sermon. We can get tricked by singing good songs. We can get tricked by surface relationships. We can be tricked by all those things and think that we're coming in contact with God and the real thing. Because it's easier. It's really more like Cain than it is like Abel. We can get tricked by religion. It's always been that way. And it always will be. That real relationship, that real connection with God is much more costly than hard work. Much more costly than planning. It is a giving of yourself. It's a death to self. There's a death involved. So they were tricked, in a sense, by religion. And we talked about this last week. You know, there's no culture ever been discovered without religion. No primitive culture, no. It's a part of us. So we have that. We have that tendency. We're always seeking a way to God. But we cannot get rid of sin and make ourselves acceptable to God. So their impressive construction efforts at this Tower of Babel did not escape God's notice. Let's keep going here with verse 5. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower and the people, and the tower the people were building. The Lord said, If as one people speaking the same language they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language, and so they will not understand each other. So, you know, God is using these terms like this to enhance our understanding of the situation. God, He already knew what was going on. He didn't have to go there to know what was. He knew what was going on. What He's saying here is He's checking it out. He's looking closely, and He's finding something in it that is evil. And the other thing He's saying is that mankind as a whole is going to lose their way if He lets this go on. You see, is unity, the way God made things, remember with Adam and Eve, there was this unity? It was symbolic and it was real. There's a powerful thing in unity. It doesn't matter if it's in science or in sports. When a group of people come together with one single goal, they're all working together towards that goal in unity, it's going to be hard to stop them. If there really is unity, it's going to be hard to stop them. And I'm not even talking about the power of God. I'm just talking about a human being. Look, if you look at a sport, how many times have you watched a sports team where there was honest to goodness unity on that team, and they would just clean house with a way superior athletically. That they'll beat a team that has way more talent if they have unity. Unity is a power. We can learn from that. Unity is a powerful, powerful thing, but it's not always used for good. And here, it was not. It was being used for evil. And God is saying, this thing is so powerful among these people that they are going to wholesale be separated from me. And I'm not going to let that happen. He was not going to let that happen. So he did something about it. And the thing that he did was that he confused their languages. We've talked about this before too, that, you know, there's no other real explanation for the different languages of the world. If language, it appears, came kind of all at once, that there's no explanation for all these different languages. And most of these languages don't have a common source. You can't find a common source. You can in some languages, we talked about that, between whatever, Spanish and English and German or whatever, you can find some common source there. But of all the languages of the world, you cannot find a common source for many languages. There is just not. It's its own entity, and there's other languages that branch out from it. God, this was the beginning of different languages and really division in the sense of spreading out. This is what caused mankind to spread out. And we don't know. We're not told how many languages there were at that time. It appears there were many, and we don't know if it was family groups or how that was divided. And also, we don't know all of the what caused completely this spreading out, this desire that, well, they no longer could communicate. They wanted to be with people of their own kind that could understand them, and there was this separation that took place. Let's see, where are we here? 11, verse 8. So the Lord scattered them from there all over the earth, and they stopped building the city. That is why it was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole world. From there the Lord scattered them all over the face of the earth. And this, there was some slowing of their progress of technology, and yet this technology that they had, this information they had, was spread from here all over the world. These people took this information with them, whether that's connected to the pyramids of Egypt or the ruins that you find in South America, the Aztec, or you go to the South Pacific Islands and you see these tremendous ruins of how did these people do this? And what most people think, the people that have studied the Bible and believe, is they took this information from here, from this Tower of Babel, and it spread throughout the whole earth. And then some people will question, well, why did these, like in the Americas, or all the way down from the further reaches, Americas, or go to South Africa, why were they so much slower in technology and in building great cities? And one answer to that is that at the time, the building technology, great civilizations, made the most progress is right around that area where they had contact, that they could trade ideas and they could trade goods, and they didn't have to go travel and go settle a new area. They stayed right there in that area of Iraq, and then right following that, spreading up into Europe. And those areas progressed the fastest with civilizations and technology. Yet when you examine these other areas around the world, they're not without technology. They're not without skills. And you even sail in the seas a lot. When you study the Polynesians, the South Pacific Islanders, is that they were traveling the seas way many years before we give them credit for it. They were some of the great, they had great knowledge of the seas, just like the Norsemen or the Vikings, you would think, that have been traveling the seas for eons and building ships. And so people were spreading over the entire world. And a lot of it is through these land bridges, with the oceans being lower for approximately 700 years after the flood, where there's places to spread to. And so it happened. And it says that God scattered them. Now, you know, I don't know if that's a desire also, not just the languages, but the desire that he put into man's heart, that whole thing to wonder, to explore, to discover what's over that next hill. People do that. That's in us to do that. You know, have you ever made that mistake? You're going out hiking or something, and you, what's over the next hill? And what's over, and pretty soon you go, oh, wow. The sun's going down, and I've crossed many hills and many streams. Can I find my way back? You know, why did I keep going? Why did I keep going? I wanted to see what was over the next hill. What's around the corner? And people have done studies that with only traveling in the warmer 4 months of people group traveling just a few miles a day, that they can get from that Iraq area with land bridges, that you can travel all the way to the Americas in about 60 years. You can people the whole thing of just traveling short distances, but over a time span of say 60 years. And they've done studies to see how long it would take and tracing the route through. Where are we at here? Verse 9. Or did we already read that? Verse 10. Well, we read that. From there the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. And you know, one thing, the Bible doesn't really distinguish people by race. And so this is a question in a lot of our minds. And you can see where evolution leads. It leads to racism. And you see it all over the world. You know, there have been back when these things were more allowed, the Aborigines of Australia. You know, there was a big debate over whether they were human or not. That was a big debate. Are they human? Or are they a missing link? And there was even a pygmy from an African tribe that was put on display, like in a zoo, that was as if he was not human. And so, if you have evolutionary beliefs, this is the route. This is the route you're going to go. That one group is going to be higher evolved than another group, And a lot of the evidence that they will point to is, look at these people are so far more advanced, but there's really simple explanations for that. These people are not more intelligent or more or superior. It's they had this advantage of technology and trading and ideas and goods back and forth, and these people had to get from here way over here, and the years and the effort that it took. And at the same time, great strides were made. But in God's view, and in our view, biblically, there is one race of people. If you take a group of people separated geographically, separated by language, they're going to be a recessive gene can become dominant. And you can, so you, if you have a, if you use skin color as an example, so if you have a black skinned person marry a white skinned person, and then their children are going to be brown skinned, they're going to have both. But if you take the brown skin, they marry the other brown skin, then pretty soon you're going to have an ascent, which we would maybe call a race of brown-skinned people over here. But it happens quickly, too. It can happen in a matter of generations where they will lose genetic information. And so they'll have these identifiable traits. And so they will then be identified as a different race of people, when really it really is not true. There are different cultures. There are different people groups that the Bible refers to, but there is one race of people. We can trace back to the three sons of Noah. From there we can trace back to Noah. From there we can trace back to Adam and Eve, the children of Adam and Eve. And I think as far as in our view of races and racism, I think it's important to understand what God says about this issue and what is explained in Scripture. So I'm going to give you guys what I want y'all to do. We touched on a lot of different things. If there's something that nags you, you can talk to me afterwards, or you can look it up yourself. I think these are important things to research. They can create little fingers of doubt in your mind. I think it's important to research and understand and see that there are good solid explanations for a lot of the things that cause us to doubt. You can the thing about the dinosaurs, or the or carbon 14 dating. That was what I was going to read you an article about carbon 14 dating, but I'll wait. But you can find that Answers in Genesis. Go to Answers in Genesis and then search carbon 14, and there's the guy that came up with carbon. I'm going there anyway, aren't I? The guy that came up with carbon 14 dating had a preconceived notion of evolution. It impacted his interpretation of the data. And it's something you need to understand if you're going to hear all this information. So go to that, answersingenesis.org. And as we wrap this up, I know it's just a lot of information. There's some things there spiritually that we need to grab, though. This idea of being tricked by religion and letting the false substitute for the real. God will restore the real. He's ready to. He wants to.